everyone, and welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Adam Verrier. Today we're talking about speed skating with Carl Oswald and Paxson Welber. Carl's the president of the board of directors for the Alaska Speed Skating Club, and Paxson is a cinematographer, a journalist, a map maker, and a speed skating explorer. Paxson and Carl, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having us.
Did I get your those introductions about right?
Yeah, my credentials are pretty short and sweet. currently sitting president of the Alaska Speed Skating Club, and I've kind of been in this role for about a year and a half, and been on the board for I guess close to 3 years now, and yep, that's who I am.
Okay, and Paxson, you got a long list of descriptors in there.
that was a lot of stuff there for me. The one thing I'll say is I don't really do speed skating per se. I'm really into Nordic skating, which is kind of a variant of speed. It's similar to speed skating, but it's all about going out on wild, natural ice.
Okay, and that's going to give us something to talk about today then.
Yeah,
don't pigeonhole yourself. Yeah.
Well, due to the coronavirus pandemic, we've been asked to stay out of the KSKA studios. And so Carl has been generous enough to invite us over to hang out at his house. So thanks for letting us come over and hang out, Carl.
My pleasure.
Well, I'd like to start with a little personal history, because my history with the sport goes back a lot longer than the first time I ever put on skates. I've been speed skating for probably 20, 25 years, and a sport I really like to do. I skate quite a bit. But the first time I got interested in speed skating was back in around 1980, just soon after the 1980 Olympics in Lake Placid, because I grew up in New Hampshire, which was just a few hours away from Lake Placid. And when I was a kid, probably in, I don't know, fifth or sixth grade, I think it was the year after the Olympics, my folks thought it would be fun to go over to Lake Placid and go cross-country skiing on the Olympic trails, which is, we liked cross-country skiing, and we went over there. And, of course, we're walking around the Olympic Village, and the speed skating arena for the Olympics is right there in the middle of Lake Placid. And I remember going and checking out some of the venues, including the speed skating rink, and there were people out there skating at the time, and I thought, this is the coolest thing ever. These guys were going so fast. They're just training or whatever, but I thought, this sport, you got this huge stadium with all these people looking at you if you're competing, and you're able to go so fast on skates. It seems like such an exotic sport, because where I grew up in northern New Hampshire, nobody was going skating. We were all playing hockey, but that was pretty much the limit of it. And people would maybe go skating on lakes occasionally, but there was no organized speed skating. So I went through high school never going out speed skating. I went through college. I was in cross-country ski racing, and I never got into speed skating until well after I moved to Anchorage. And there was some skating, I think, on some local lakes, and Jim Rankert, who was really promoting speed skating around the time that I, soon after I moved here, really kind of got me into the sport. And so when I first got a pair of skates and started skating, I have to say it was at least as cool as I thought. But I had been in love with the sport even long before doing it, because it just seemed so fast. I knew that these guys could go 40 miles an hour plus on skates, and it seemed so effortless. And so that was my introduction to the sport. And it has brought... For me, part of the reason I wanted to talk to you guys today is it occurred to me that there were some sort of barriers to the sport, I guess, for me.
Absolutely.
It seemed like such an exotic sport that wasn't really accessible to me. And of course, what's more simple than going out skating in a place that where there's winter?
Yeah, you know, that's a very, kind of mirrors my own kind of like path to the sport. For me, it was the 88 Olympics. Seeing it on TV, it was our first TV in the house for the 88 Olympics. So that would have been Calgary, I believe. And I couldn't name names, but I got to see some hotshot skaters in their zoot suits whipping around track. And I had grown up here in Anchorage, my family, playing league hockey. And, that was great. You know, we practiced outside all winter long. Played Anchorage Bulldog comp hockey, you know, during the kind of heyday of that league, or at least that club. I don't know. Hopefully Bulldogs are still around. Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to go as fast as I could. And our first kind of in-person interaction with speed skating was, of course, during the Furonde speed skating event at Mulcahy Park. And we were, you know, I'd see some of those, you know, older fellas in their leather Swede, you know, speed skates. And I was like, I want to get in some of those someday.
Because you were on hockey skates,
probably. Yeah, we were all racing on hockey skates. Yeah. We'd get out there and just do what we could. And, yeah, it was great fun. I don't think they've held that particular event in some years during Furonde, but it was something. Going fast on ice is, you know, skating in general, it's effortless to a degree, but the ability to kind of cruise over some of the fastest human-powered things you can do on a natural sheet of ice is, yeah, always was something I knew eventually I would intersect with.
Yeah, and Paxton, you were saying that you're really interested in sort of adventure skating, and I think you've come to the sport a little bit more recently.
Yeah, for sure. I moved back to Anchorage in December 2014, and one of the first things I did is go to I went to AMH, and I got some. I'd heard about these things called Nordic skates, where you could kind of use your Nordic skate ski boots and bindings, and then put these skates on instead of skis. So I went over and I just bought a pair, and the skating season was kind of done for the season because there was a lot of snow already. But I took them out to, I set them up and they looked kind of cool, and I took them out to the Anchorage Coastal Wildlife Refuge, and there was some overflow out on the coast. And I just went out by myself and I skated one time, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the most like fun and aesthetically beautiful thing I've ever done in Alaska. It's like you're flying across this mirror and you're surrounded by mountains, and it's so fast and it's so effortless, and it's just such a beautiful sport. So while I was walking back to my car, I called my buddy Kale up, who's he's a videographer. And I just said, oh my gosh, like I just found the most amazing sport. You have to like film this, because he was getting into drone videography. So we made this little film that winter, and you know, again, like we basically missed the whole normal skating season. So we were going out and skating weird, you know, marginal ice, and just really, you know, dropping work off and shooting down to the Kenai Peninsula because we'd heard that a little bit of ice was in. And my skating in this film is terrible, because I was learning to skate and he was learning to be a drone videographer, and we almost didn't even put the video out. But eventually we figured out we should put this out as kind of an artifact of us learning how to do this. And the little film is called Wild Ice, and it ended up getting featured in National Geographic and Outside TV. It was in the Washington Post and ADN. And people were just, I think, shared our excitement for just how just insanely beautiful this sport is. Even as graceless as my skating is, I mean, it's just an inherently very graceful thing. And you know, you're out in this beautiful Alaska landscape, and
you meet really cool people out there. That's what's cool. Yeah. We're all drawn. We're all kind of cut from the same fabric. And kind of as an aside, this is actually how Pax and I first met. Okay. We actually haven't formally met until actually right now. We're kind of blind dating on Outdoor Explorer. but that's good.
Such a weird way to put
it. But it's great because, you know, I was out on a little midweek mission down at the Portage Train Depot there down south of Girdwood, just near the 20 mile, the depot down there. And there's these great ponds, you know, and the ice was just, crisp, pristine. And no one was there, you know, it was middle of the day on a Wednesday and beautiful. It's just my dogs and I were going to go get some laps in on these ponds, and there's these dudes down the way, and one of them's flying a drone. I was like, oh no, what's this all gonna be about? And you know, I walked down, these guys I think approached me, and I learned later it was Kale. He's like, hey, you mind if we film you? And I was kind of suspect about it all, and I was like, well, if you can keep up. And man, was I blown away by this guy's piloting skills. Like, he was on me, you know, and that was a lot of fun. So I think it was like the next winter, we're in bed kind of going to sleep. My wife's kind of looking through her feed, and she's like, hey, this is a really cool video of skaters, you know, and I think those are our dogs. And so apparently, you know, I made the final cut of that production, which, you know, to Kale and Paxson's credit, is phenomenally produced. It's captive. That's why National Geo picked it up, and I definitely applaud their efforts.
Well, that brings up something I wanted to talk about. Paxson was talking about, he's become an international film star as he describes himself.
That's a little generous.
Yeah, I'd say.
Being a rank amateur skater, as he describes himself.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I wonder about listeners who may be hearing this show about speed skating and say, well, I don't know how I'd really get into that sport.
Well, you know, and that's what we've alluded to, Adam and myself, Carl. It was something that captivated us from an early age. We wanted to find a way into it, but there wasn't any readily available pathway there. My own experience was really mirrored Adam's in that I knew it was out there. I knew it existed. I even knew there was actually this club. I mean, growing up in Anchorage, it was pretty underground club back then. But the people that started this club, I mean, it's the Alaska Speed Skating Club has been around for, I want to say, about 40 years now, or close to it. And the speed skating, there was a speed skating scene back in the 60s, actually, in the middle school. ASD, back then it was probably a different agency, but they had a program in the middle school. So there was Central, Wendler, and one other school, and they actually would get together, they'd compete, and some of those skaters are still with us skating speed skate. And so you kind of intersect, and that's how a lot of things would happen growing up in the 80s, 90s here. I mean, you know, there's people out doing some really amazing things, and you want to like attach yourself at the hip to these people, but you only intersect on occasion. Now it seems like, you know, you can jump into all kinds of different endeavors a lot easier with the information age, the internet. But it took me a while to get there. And now that I am, I just want to spread the good word.
Well, and one of those places would be the Cuddy Rink, I would think. I mean, it's the Cuddy Speed Skating Loop. It's right behind the library in Midtown. And that has got to be one of the projects that has brought speed skating closer to the public, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. That park is like, it's just this gem right there in Midtown Anchorage, the Cuddy Family Midtown Park.
And how did that come to be?
Well, I'm learning more and more about the history. I'm actually serving on this quasi board to actually further that project along. The master plan calls for a facility that's there for not only warming purposes, but we're envisioning like some restroom facilities there, kind of a community facility similar to the Kincaid Park. So in that kind of exercise, and I've been learning kind of about the bigger history of the park. Of course, the Cuddy families have been right there from the outset. I'll probably, you know, massacre some of this history, but my understanding is like the land was kind of donated, granted to the municipality. And then it was, they just started chipping away these folks like Art Geis and Tim Potter, Jim Renker was there. Some of these guys that just had a passion for, you know, public works. And that's what it is. It's a public works park. It's a central park of Anchorage.
Well, it sounds like there was a recognition that there needed to be a permanent, that there was enough interest in a speed skating park. And one of the advantages to Cuddy.
Well, I'd like to, that's one little aspect of the overall park. This park has got many different flavors to it. There's an ADA playground there that Leah Bolts and her daughter really spearheaded, kind of bringing that to fruition. And that actually was kind of like a template for bringing other ADA accessible playgrounds throughout the Anchorage area. that's been a huge, amazing addition in that park. The oval, yes, was part of the original kind of plan and idea, genesis of that park. And it's was finally put in about, I want to say about 10 years ago,
yeah,
through a concerted effort of, you know, legacy people tied to the park.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to take a short break right now. We'll be right back in just a few moments to continue our discussion with Carl Oswald and Paxson Welber. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Adam Verrier, and today I'm speaking with Paxson Welber and Carl Oswald about speed skating in all its forms. And we were just starting to talk about the skating oval at the Cuddy Park. And one thing that occurs to me about that oval is that regardless of how thick or thin the natural ice around town might be, the oval is always, it's got concrete just a few inches underneath or asphalt. So one thing you cannot do is go fall through the ice and drown at the Cuddy Park, which I think is a big advantage over some places that may have marginal ice.
Yeah, it takes this, you know, you don't have to be as cognizant of maybe your backcountry acumen to go get out and skate fast. And actually, we usually generally, so Edwin Blair over Alpine Services in the Anchorage Skate Club, he maintains that sheet of ice for us, for the community. Generally, historically, it's in by Thanksgiving, and it's, you know, pretty good skating by then. That's not to say we can't skate a lot earlier. I usually start skating in October, that's usually one of the safer places to skate early season once it's in November. A lot of the other ice sheets around town, you better, you know, you kind of have to have your wits about you. We skate on some thin ice, but you generally have to have a skill set to kind of ascertain the safety of that ice.
Yeah.
Natural ice versus, this is a man-made ice sheet at Cuddy Ice Oval.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you had mentioned earlier that you both met at on a sheet of natural ice down
exactly,
at 20 Mile.
Yeah.
And so what do you, Paxson, what do you do, do you have concerns about skating on ice that's got deep water underneath it? And how do you mitigate the risk of falling through? I mean, obviously, if it's 2 feet of ice, there's no issue. But do you skate when there's marginal conditions, or how do you?
I do, personally, sometimes. kind of ethos of Nordic skating is that it's all about getting out on wild and kind of natural ice. So sometimes I equate it to like mountain biking versus road biking. So you're using this tool that lets you get out on, frankly, you know, 99.9% of the ice in the world is just natural ice forming on lakes and sloughs and ponds and such. So Nordic skating is kind of the way to get out there and experience that. You find yourself weaving through these like little channels and marshes and winding between trees at high speed and kind of doing turns around icebergs and glacial lagoons. You know, it's really exciting, but it's definitely a very different kind of project as far as safety goes. So especially on marshes, for example, you can have kind of organic gases coming down from coming up from the bottom of the marsh and making thin spots or holes in the ice. And then wild ice can just be very variable. So sometimes you'll have a lake that has very thick ice on one end, and then the other end is open water. So you have to be very cognizant of the risks. Luckily, there's a lot you can do. I mean, little tiny steps make a huge difference in safety with Nordic ice skating. So at bare minimum, you know, obviously wear a helmet. A lot of people wear knee or shoulder pads or elbow pads because you can.
You might meet a hockey player.
You never know where you can get a pickup game going on. But also, you know, wild ice has cracks and might have little pebbles or rocks and has things that you could run into. So, you know, a lot of people have some basic fall protection. And then bare minimum, you have to have ice self-rescue picks. So those are sharp little, two sharp little picks that you can hold in your hands and use to pull yourself up out of the water if you break through the ice.
And where do you, are those available in town?
Yeah, so you could buy those at AMH or Sportsman's Warehouse, I think, has some really affordable ones, like $6 or something, that are kind of designed for ice fishermen.
They kind of hang over your neck on a string.
There's different styles. Yeah. Personally, what I say is just as long as you have them at all, that's, you know, that's a lot of the battle. There's some really, really nice ones that are imported from Scandinavia, but they're like $40. You know, I'd rather that people just... those are great, but if all you're going to do, if that means you're not going to buy them, just go to Sportsman's and buy the $6 ones and keep them in your chest pocket. But you have to make sure they're accessible. And then some people skate with a throw rope or an ice screw to assist with rescue. And then if you're any significant distance from your car, it's kind of best practice to carry a change of clothes and a dry bag in a backpack. And then as far as clothing, if there's really thin ice, sometimes the really thin, smooth ice is just the best to skate on, but it's definitely riskier. So we'll sometimes go out in dry suits.
Life jackets in thin conditions.
And then wearing thick base layer, thick, fully synthetic base layers is a really good idea too. I've kind of intentionally gone out because I'm experimenting with gear. So I've intentionally gone out and broken through thin ice wearing really thick synthetic base layers. And I've been able to literally climb up out of the water and just keep skating, even when it's very, very cold, because those thick base layers, thick synthetic base layers, are able to shed water so efficiently.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like basically just make the assumption you might fall through and have a plan for when that happens, including ice picks. And I personally, I've been known to wear a life jacket out skating. Yeah. It just makes me feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and even if I've never fallen through into deep water, but I have to say that if I'm out there to enjoy myself, I enjoy myself a lot less if in the back of my mind I'm thinking, oh, I hope I don't drown.
One of the key things how I approach, especially early season ice as it's forming, is I'm always approaching it with a beginner's mind, and I'm collecting data for myself first. I'll share all my data points. You know, I'm skating a lot of different areas, but I'm there kind of measuring the ice. I'm drilling through it. I got a little hammer drill, a little battery powered DeWalt, and I got a paddle bit on it. And I don't trust other people's kind of judgment about things, or casually just ask, oh, how is that ice? Someone getting off. I go and check it. And it's really easy to go check a huge field of ice really quick with a drill and a tape measure. So I'm always zooming around. If you see a guy like out there drilling through the ice early season, it's often likely me, because then that takes that element of the unknown away. And then I know what I can get away with skating different thicknesses ice. All these different ice sheets have very different characteristics. Mm-hmm. Potter's Marsh, like a marsh, like Paxson was saying, with the gases and the currents we see down at Potter Marsh, is extremely different from like Beer Can or Little Campbell Lake, which is different from Fox Lake, which is different from, you know, they all have their own unique, and that's kind of the fun of it, because it's really variable, and it's when, and then you do find that beautiful ice. It's like a treasure hunt.
And wild ice too is so incredibly interesting to look at. I mean, the number of, before I started Nordic skating, I never knew how kind of varied and like fascinating and fun to look at wild ice is. There's so many weird formations, and like different, you know, things caused by refreezing and just kind of weird physics stuff going on with wild ice. One really cool example is 2 years ago, we went out to Portage Lake and it had refrozen in the spring. So we were skating in March, and the whole lake was crisscrossed with these double helix formations where these two cracks were, the cracks were like intertwined in a double helix formation, just all over the ice. It was the weirdest thing. And I do not understand. I can't even start to grasp the physics that causes formations like that, but you just see stuff like that all the time when you're out on wild ice. It's just always so fascinating, and it is a lot of fun.
One of our great things we do with the kids love this, is you go out right at dusk, you go to one of those marsh ponds, and you see those bells of gas, and you see where they perk out of the top of the ice, and you go poke yourself a little orifice.
Yeah.
You light that thing off. Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And methane burns like really clean, really blue, beautiful flames.
Yeah.
And you can capture them at dusk. And one time we were out at Jim Lake, Cash, Joyce and I, and all day long we were going around, and these huge bells of, well, gas. You know, we didn't think about it at the time. Massive 4-foot diameter bells of gas in this most crystal of ice. And we're going along, and just where they aerate, there's some crystals, and we're just going along and poking them and watch the geyser of water, because the water, you know, the pressure
pops up through.
And well, it took us a while, but then it dawned on us that was gas. And well,
we went back for days
and lit them off. And I've never seen bells that big again. And I imagine, you know, you got to be somewhat careful with bells that big. But you know, and then some on my North Slope, Arctic friends, they do that for fun growing up there. They got a lot of, you know, lake gas up there.
Yeah.
Another really cool thing, there's a place called Rabbit Slough that's gotten really popular for Nordic skating, and it gets a lot of kind of freeze-thaw, refreeze kind of cycles. And sometimes fish get trapped between the layers of ice, so you'll be skating down Rabbit Slough and you'll see all these little fish swimming underneath your skates. It's like swimming on top of an aquarium. It's so cool and so weird.
Yeah, like at Potter Marsh, there's like these freshwater clams, and you can find, you know, before too many people get out there and cut up that ice when it's real clear early season, you can find these freshwater clam tracks, and you can follow them, and you know, find the clam, or maybe a muskrat will go by underwater, and all the fishes under there swimming around, the kids. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like being a kid again,
right,
and that's
right.
Skating. Yeah. You know, that's it's just such joy. It's so easy to elicit that just joyful, because who doesn't like to glide on water? Whether it's surfing or skiing, and skating is, you know, one of those special things.
Well, you've been mentioning Potter Marsh, and another thing that I like about Potter Marsh is that you can skate in places where it's really shallow, and probably the only place I've fallen through the ice is Potter Marsh. And
my brother falls through every year without fail.
But it's nice you go in up to your knees.
Well, you get kind of mucky and it stinks,
but
you do got to be somewhat careful at Potter, because it is a really early season, real variable bathymetry under there, and it creates like weird voids where you'd think, like, even when Potter's Marsh gets 6 inches deep sometimes, like, it's all winter long, can be kind of, you got to be a little suspect of some of the ice, but it is a great entry point into the wild ice, so to speak, kind of, because it's really accessible, and it's still fun. Like, the sun's, you still capture the sun down there, you know, early season.
Well, so we've been talking about all these great places you can go, and the cool things you can do on skates. I guess a question that our audience might have is, how do you, like, what's it cost to get in? It's a simple sport, but, you know, is it going to cost $800 for a pair of carbon fiber skates?
Oh, absolutely. You can definitely break the bank on skates. You know, it's kind of like, you could develop a fetish, I suppose. You know, have a whole fleet. I know guys like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they get out and skate on them.
Two kinds of skates.
You know, like, it. Honestly, I truly believe it's one of the lowest barriers to entry of any, like, winter sport or activity, because you can go down to play it again, get a $20 pair of skates. You take them over to Champion's Choice. They put they hone them up super sharp. You're off skating. You know, and a lot of, and there's so much great ice just here in Anchorage and the different communities. The valley has a plethora of lakes to choose from. And it's a really, you know, it's an easy thing to go do. And aside from getting long blades, whether they're Nordic blades or getting into speed skating, just getting out on skates and being excess, you know, the backcountry on, you know, we grew up skating on our hockey skates on Portage, and that was just, it was great, you know?
Well, and one question I have when you mention hockey skates is, and we've been talking about the Cuddy rink, or the Cuddy, Cuddy Oval. Is it cool to use hockey skates out
absolutely.
There? Do you have to have speed skates?
Oh yeah, no, it's a
anything
park open to the public. Yeah. We
anybody,
love yeah.
Anybody
can come by. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got figure skaters that come out, and it's great because, you know, you see in so many different styles of skating out there, but yet, you know, but
And those blades are a little bit different. The way they're sharpened, the way they interact with the ice.
So the long blades, like speed skates and Nordic skates, they have a flat grind. So there's no concavity to the grind of the blade.
Whereas hockey skates are going to have a concave line. They're really
turning. Yeah, the hockey skaters like to turn on a dime. They're looking for super tight grip to the ice. They want to engage that edge and be able to just put the power through it. You know, and I'm not as familiar with figure skaters, but I imagine they have kind of like a concave grind too. But you see the power they transmit into that small little blade, and I think that's part of the reason. Our strides are a little different with speed skating. The same concepts are all there between the different skating disciplines, so to speak. But our blades are maintained a little different for edge, for the sharpness. And it's something that, being part of the speed skating club, I really want to promote the ideas. Like, you know, I do this little lecture, you know, I've done a couple lectures at REI kind of introducing speed skating and kind of Nordic skating and how easy it is to get into. And but, you know, the sharpening thing is kind of akin to waxing your skis. You don't just go out and ski all winter long with, you know, one waxing on your skis.
Well, some people do.
Well, some people do. Some, probably the coaches of this world. Yeah. but it is, you know, with a few skills and some mentorship, it's really easy to pick up. And then, hey, with Alaska Speed Skating Club, members have a whole host of resources to access, whether that's stones and jigs for skates, primarily the speed skating side of things, but we also offer skate sharpening for the Nordic crowd, the Nordic skating crowd. AMH also sharpens Nordic skates, but I like to say, hey, jigs and stones will save your bones, and it's the truth. Safety starts with proper gear maintenance and having the proper mind to check that gear. You know,
yeah, well, I think you saw a blatant disregard for safety last year when we were in a ski race and I showed up with those blades that crashing
left and right. That was exciting. I let you take the podium on that one just to maintain safe distancing.
Well, and Paxson, you've come here with, I see sitting beside you, a whole bunch of skates of different colors. What's the story with these? You brought some toys with you, it looks like.
Yeah, so after I started getting really into Nordic skating, I started to think, you know, are these skates something that we can manufacture in the U.S.? Right now, all the skates on the market are imported from Scandinavia, or there's one brand in China. But they're mechanically fairly simple objects, and I just thought, you know, maybe we can make these here. So I kind of kicked around some ideas for a few years, but I didn't really get going with it until I got hooked up last winter with Samson Shepard, who works for Arctic Manufacturing Services. And Samson really had the engineering background to know how to produce these, how to do the machining. And so we kind of worked together to develop a skate. And this year we're producing the first batch of made in the US, you know, first batch in North America. Made in Alaska, homegrown Nordic ice skates.
And so these Nordic ice skates, you clip these onto a ski boot, a regular pair of skate ski boots with a Nordic binding, and you're able to go skating. Is that?
Yeah, that's right. So it's so easy to get into especially if you already have Nordic skate ski boots. Yeah. You just mount the binding, clip into it, and you're good to go.
And so for the listener that's trying to imagine what this thing looks like, it's basically it's a steel blade, it's a skate blade. It's pretty long, it's about the length of a speed skating blade, but it's got a little platform on the top, and you just mount the binding right onto that. It's about the width of a cross-country racing ski, and you just pick yourself up a pair of bindings, bolt them on, and as long as you got a pair of ski boots, and skate ski boots would be best, I think.
Yeah, skate ski boots are fairly essential when you're kind of standing on that thin blade. Like if you think hockey skates, you know, what your foot goes into is actually extremely stiff. That provides the torsional stability when you're on that tiny little thin blade contacting the ice. Well, ski boots, Nordic boots, are generally, they don't approach those kind of stiffnesses you see in like hockey boots and speed skates. So the cuff is kind of essential. The sole flex a little bit too. You're going to have a kind of a hard go out of it trying to use your classic boots, because you, unless you got Samson freaking ankles of steel, it's really hard to maintain that balance. And so ski boots, good solid cuffs. Sometimes the younger ones, I've had them in the combi boots we see common with the younger skaters that coming over from the Nordic side. They're in a combi boot. But even those can be a little soft because they have a soft sole for the classic kind of stride. You want a soft sole for that. So the stiffer boot you can get them in, you can tweak that little. There's some brands out there with a better combi cuff on the boots. My own kids used a brand called Mod Shoes, so we could cross over from their Nordic endeavors to skating fairly well. But now my older ones are in a proper skate ski boot, and oh yeah, it's like when they get to ride a full suspension mountain bike for the first time. They're like, oh my God, you've been holding out on us.
So if you're not going with hockey skates or figure skates, and you're going to get a pair of skates that's really ideal for skating, It sounds like you kind of have two choices. You either get yourself, you go with your cross-country, your skate boots, and you get yourself a Nordic blade, like something like Ehrman is making, or you get yourself a pair of dedicated speed skates, which would have either a fiberglass or a carbon fiber boot that's super stiff. And what would be the advantage to each of those approaches? Because it sounds like those are the two approaches you could use.
Yeah, if you want to go fast on the ice, those are kind of the two ways to get at it. I mean, you can. I know a lot of fast hockey skaters, but you know, we'll drop them after the first 100 yards or so. So it is an investment getting into this initially. In my experience, Nordic skates range from, you know, the super cheap. You can find super cheap, poorly manufactured Asveeta. I shouldn't throw names out. But you can find, you know, the cheaper used side, like down 60, 40 bucks, which is a great entry point to see, oh, what's this all about? You know, go down to Danish, go down to Hording Marmot or Play It Again and kind of, look for these aluminum skates with long blades, and yeah, try them on. You know, and take them out. It's kind of a great starting point. If you get hooked, now you'll see there's a huge difference in quality out there, big time. And back to safety, keeping your skate sharp. The better steel stays sharp longer. So then you're getting up in the, you know, $120, $150, $200 price range for a really high quality skate. That is going to last for a long time.
Okay.
I've been skating some skates for 20 years now.
Yeah. And that's for a pair of Nordic blades that fits on your boots.
Yeah. But then you do have to get a binding. So at first people are like, oh, I want to get into this. And then there's this, buyer's, trepidation, because there is, especially if they're not crossing over already from the Nordic realm and they have all that stuff, there is a bit of sticker shock, so to speak, at the outset. Oh, but what you gain from it is, you know, priceless.
Well, and the gear does last a long time too. So to get into a completely new sport for potentially a few hundred bucks, I think, is really not bad.
And gain access to the wilds of Alaska.
Yeah. We priced our skate, the Ehrman skate, our first skate is the A100, and we priced it at 190, which we're really, really proud of, being able to offer kind of a top quality, made in Alaska Nordic skate at an accessible price point.
And seeing for the first time, pretty good judge of quality. These have it in spades, and I'm impressed that you guys can keep that price point.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to a lot of
people. Going IPO?
Yeah. Well, I talk to people, and they say, oh, you know, the way you're describing your skates, you know, handmade in Alaska, like, you really, this sounds like a $300 product, and it's like, you know, I really want the sport. I love Nordic skating. I want more people to get into it. I want it to be accessible. I don't want people to feel that it's unaffordable or something, you know, it's like a high-end activity. I really want it to be something where people can get into it and the entire market can grow and we can get more people out on the ice. Because it is just such a fun, I mean, independently of me providing a product in the Nordic skating field, I just love the sport and I want more people to get into it.
Yeah, and I think we have a lot of the shared vision, because that's with Alaska Speed Skating Club. Our goals as a club, our mission is to expose the community to speed skating. And how do we best do that? We keep the barriers to entry as low as possible. Yeah. But it all gets down to the root of it. It's just like, we want people to skate. I think every person in Alaska growing up, it's like one of those, it should be like a skill set, you know. We live in the ice, we live in the snow, we should all skate.
Something that's kind of fun to add too, I think when I started getting into Nordic skating here in like 2015, 2016, around there, the community was substantially smaller, and I think Nordic skating was still seen as kind of a shoulder season activity. So people were kind of waiting for the snow to come in so they could actually go skiing. So they're like, all right, well, fine, there's ice, we'll deal with it. But it's grown up as independently as such a fun and exciting sport that the community has just grown massively in the last few years. And you have so many people with eyes on the ice trying to everybody's driving around South Central Alaska or around Alaska trying to find lakes that are freezing up, and then they're testing them and they're posting ice reports. And
there's so much camaraderie in that, and people to learn from now. There's so many, there's like a critical mass of people with actually the skill set that you can go just join up with them now. And you just learn it by osmosis. It's really simple in that respect to meet the community.
Well, we'll take a short break right now. I will be right back to continue this discussion with Carl Oswald and Paxson Welber. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. I'm Adam Verrier, and today I'm speaking with Paxson Welber and Carl Oswald about speed skating in all its forms. And we've been talking about this sport and how it allows you access to the wilderness and to really cool places that are maybe very kind of difficult to access at other times of the year. I have a question about if you get into skiing. We've talked a little bit about Nordic blades and how relatively inexpensive it is. I guess the other option would be dedicated speed skates.
Mm-hmm.
What would, if you were thinking about getting? I think that speed skates are going to be more expensive. You're going to get
I would say your entry point on a speed skate of, you know, kind of a mid quality speed skate will be cheaper than your general kind of full package Nordic skate setup. Now, speed skates are pretty, shall we say, kind of like the Ferrari of skates, you know? They can be kind of touchy, and so they don't always transfer over into the backcountry real well because of the variability of the ice. They're kind of fairly high-tuned instruments.
Okay.
That said, I take my speed skates out, my clappers, my short track skates. I take them out to the wild ice because there's nothing that approaches the speed of a true speed skate.
Yeah.
And just the effortless and the power you can transmit through that platform into that blade upon that ice, especially those days where it's just like it's emerald stone hard ice.
So one of the advantages would be performance.
And
a disadvantage, I suppose, would be portages.
Yeah, like exactly. The portages being like where we're kind of out in the backcountry and you want to take your boots off real quick and, you know, jump over the next lake over the horizon that you may or may not know is there. And that makes it complicated. You see a lot of people out in the backcountry on hockey skates and, you know,
they have to...
they're a little jealous when we just go back to our cars for hot chocolate or whatever.
Well, I'd say as a Nordic skater, sometimes I'll be way out, you know, on Lynx Lake Loop or something. And, you know, Nordic skates are an amazing tool for doing these multi-lake chains and everything. But then I'll see some speed skaters way out on, you know, Chicken Lake or something, and they're just going so, like, scary fast. And I get a little bit of professional jealousy. Yeah. So when the ice is really good, the speed skaters really kill it on the, on the backcountry ice.
And you know, there's not many of us that actually will take our true speed skates out on natural ice.
It's a hassle.
It's not necessarily a hassle, but they don't roll over stuff or go over stuff as easy. It's kind of the profile of the nose has a lot to do with how safe a skate is. You really got to have your wits about you skating on a true speed skate in the backcountry. Okay. That said, putting a true speed skate on your feet really highlights your technique, especially if it's a fixed blade. They have these, you know, out on the long track, maybe people have seen, in the Olympics, you see these guys, they have these really fancy looking skates that have a hinged blade, kind of like a Nordic ski. You can get away still with those, a lot of sloppy technique, but you put a fixed blade, short track type style speed skate on your foot and it instantly will translate into making you a better skater because you have to be cognizant of your technique more. And there's like tells. There's really easy tells if you're trying to impart some technical kind of information to a skater. You can, someone that's maybe dropping their hip too much, they'll grab the toe of that skate and you hear this little, you know, and what's that doing? Well, it's slowing you down. Let's not do that. How do we not do that? Well, we've got all these techniques to make you a better skater.
Well, and speaking of technique, what if I want to become a better skater? What, you know, if I do a little bit of skating, I head out and I realize I'm just not that good at this, and I see people skating a lot better than me.
That's what's better about the Nordic skating crowd. I mean, they're all having so much fun, but oh my God, could they have so much more fun? Just some simple things.
But I'm wondering, where can they go? Does Anchorage Speed Skating Club offer any sort of coaching?
So yeah, here at the Alaska Speed Skating Club, we offer programs, speed skating programs, both short track and long track. Our short track practices are already underway for our fall winter season at the Royal Ice Arena Center in South Anchorage at the O'Malley, the O'Malley area.
Short track speed skating being indoor.
Short track speeding is indoors. We put pads against the boards and we skate on a 110 meter track, and it's fast, it's exciting, you know, you're turning a lot more.
And it's inside a hockey rink.
Yeah, those turns come up a lot quicker. So, it's on a hockey rink. If you've ever seen the Olympics where they're zipping on, you know, in a little scrum of people, I think Apollo Ono really kind of like started making that famous, you know, nationally. It's kind of, you know, gain some traction in the community.
So there's a program for that then?
Exactly.
Anchorage, a person could go online and find Anchorage Speed Skating Club.
AlaskaSpeedSkating.org.
And that's a coached program.
Exactly.
To learn how to skate. And how about kids getting into skating? I mean, how does that, do you have any programs for kids?
These are primarily geared towards kids.
Okay.
I mean, what is great, you know, we've got a really great a youth program going on in the speed short track side of things, and these kids are dedicated. They get to that oval at 7:30 to 7:45. They're ready to hit the ice at 8:15, and we've got that ice till 9:45, and it's very professionally managed ice. I mean, ice isn't cheap. You know, indoor ice takes a lot to maintain, and so we try to run a really efficient professional practice during those times because we're trying to maximize that ice time cost. And so that can honestly, sometimes that's a little intimidating for people, kind of just trying to enter in, dip their toes in, because you're like, whoa, oh, I could, those kids look pretty pro, you know, and it can be intimidating at first, but it's just such a nice community that, I mean, we want you to skate with us no matter what. Right. But the long track oftentimes is a little less intimidating from that side of things.
Well, speaking of long track speed skating and getting back to skating adventures, you had talked about going out and immediately finding Paxson that even on your first couple of times skating, like, oh, I can access all these areas I've never been before. It sounds like you've skated around the area around South Central Alaska. Have either of you guys gone off on any like skating vacations? I mean, I'm thinking of Jim Rankert and the trip that he made to Holland back in, I think it was 1996, which was one of the last times that they had the big race called the Elfstedentocht, or the 11 cities tour, yeah. Which is a huge race. Something like 16,000 people in this race.
And it hasn't been held since.
Has it not? Okay.
I don't believe
so. Because
they can
only run it when there's enough ice.
Yeah, they haven't. And, you know, we could be the next 11 city Elfstedentocht. Elfstedentocht.
That's the
best. I'd love to learn that language. Yeah, and we can all thank Jim Ranker for I don't know if he poached that race or somehow he got in, and it's kind of like, yeah, it's to select 16,000 people, and they tend to be all Danes.
Well, and that race is a 200-kilometer race, so it's a really special race. And I think you're right that he did really do a lot for skating in this town by bringing that story back of getting into this race with 16,000 people.
Well, as legend has it, I mean, and the story kind of roughly follows him getting somehow entry into this race, getting over there, not having his skates show up with his luggage, and his host family was like, well, you know, just try these things on. These are great. They're comfortable too. You'll like them more than your speed skates probably. Oh, he sure did. Yeah. And those were Nordic skates. Yeah. And then he brought them back, and it was a light bulb moment for him. And it's been a light bulb moment for all of us. Honestly, I've, you know, certain people in my orbit, you know, I've, you know, preach to them for years, and then they finally get on them, and they're like, oh my God. You know, you grow up skating, you know, here playing hockey, or even like out in the backcountry, and sometimes it's this newfangled thing. You're like, oh, why would I want to do that? Well, you want to do it because you go fast, and it's a easy thing to put on the foot. And yeah, we can all thank Jim for showing up in the, I guess, yeah, after that race, he started importing them, selling them out as his vehicle. And then, you know, of course, Paul Dinkelwater at AMH, you know, he was always ready to innovate, and he wanted to bring him in, and he started, and that's how my family, my father, you know, of course, got his first, as soon as they showed up, he was like, oh, let's go get some of those, and the rest is history. And I, you know, I knew back then, this was 96, probably 97, that winter, I mean, it was a big light bulb moment for me. And I found myself out there in the backcountry, you know, on something other than hockey skates, covering some huge distance. And I was like, it's only going to be a matter of time before this takes off.
Right. And so are there any places that you haven't gone yet that you've been dreaming about?
Oh, God,
I think I heard something about skating around Lake Baikal in Russia or something.
Yeah. A lot of my kinfolk come over from that part of the world way back when, and I've always been intrigued by that area, and Lake Baikal in particular, because I know there is a skate scene over there, and Yuri, what's Yuri's name, last name?
I don't remember. Yeah, the guys contacted both of us and kind of said, hey, you should come over and skate Lake Baikal.
Does that sort of thing interest you at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've talked to Kale, so we're actually kind of in the early stages of planning Wild Ice 2, sort of longer form film about wild ice skating. And we're hoping, to speak to your question about traveling earlier, we are hoping to do a little bit of national and international travel and film this, make this new film about skating on wild and natural ice. It is really difficult to get the timing right. I mean, one of the really frustrating but also really cool things about Nordic skating or wild ice skating generally is that sometimes the really good ice is only there for sometimes it's as short as like a few hours, because you're trying to catch this window between the ice forming and being supportive, and then before it's had a chance to get covered up with snow. So sometimes it's like when the ice really gets in, comes in on Portage Lake or Kootenai or something, like you take off work, you go, you hit it while it's good. And that can be difficult to do even just on a little local level. So when you're talking about traveling to skate, man, it's like you gotta know that the conditions are good or anticipate them, book your ticket, you gotta go right away. The one time that I've done that was when we were filming the first Wild Ice video. We had a friend down in Cordova who was like, oh, you guys are skating? Like, you know, the Sheridan Glacier, I think the lagoon froze. You guys should come down. And we jumped on a plane the next day, literally, and went down. And sure enough, Sheridan Glacier Lagoon was just frozen completely, perfectly smooth. It was some of the best ice I've ever skated on in my life. So we were, the next day, we were winding around at high speed between these icebergs. And yeah, just beautiful day of skating. But yeah, traveling for wild ice, oh, super tough. And it would really burn to like fly to Sweden to skate in the fjords or something, and then they're like, oh, you know, it snowed, you know. So like
right on the Baltic Sea. I think it's very popular there. Skating offshore.
Yeah, they
off
have
right.
Over there they have like what do they call, like public transport bus system set up to, you know, you don't have to skate back to where you started.
Okay, you take the bus back.
Yeah, you just take the bus.
Yeah, so in that way, like what you're talking about, it would be a lot like the professional surfing world where these guys,
exactly.
There's a big swell coming in Tahiti. It's going to be there in 72 hours.
Rob Whitney, he turned me on last winter to some ice. He heard the Gruink Lake down there south of Homer was in. And I was like, oh, really? I've been trying to get that for a couple years. But, you know, it's a bit of a distance. Well, you know, there was a lot of silver linings last year with the kids at home doing the homeschool. And Wednesdays were officially asynchronous. So
okay.
We took asynchronous adventures. And we jammed down there as a whole family. My wife, I pitched this to my wife. And I was like, she is never going to go for this. And she's like, oh, that sounds like doable.
Yeah.
And man, we went for it. And we left the house, I believe, at like 3 or 4 in the morning. Jammed down there. It was beautiful, beautiful drive. And it was going to be the last good day. And it was severe, clear weather that like, morning crisp sunrise as we're coming into Homer, go down to the docks, jump on Mako's water taxi, head over there, hike in. It's actually a beautiful hike. It's really easy. Of course, I had never been there, so I had a ton of stuff with me, but I had my dog team to help pull the loads, and we raced in there with our little 2-year-old Conrad at the time, and then my older son, he was 13, my daughter was 11, and so they can carry, you know, quite a bit. And we raced up there with our friend Jody Jenkins, and she somehow signed up for this crazy adventure. And oh yeah, another skating dream came true. I got to skate with the icebergs at Gruink.
Well, I think that pretty much that brings us to the limit of the time that we've got.
Thank you.
We've got a lot more to go. We'll have to continue this discussion. But I'd like to thank Paxton Welber and Carl Oswald for taking the time to talk to me today. I'd like to thank Carl for hosting us here in his home. And of course, I'd like to thank Eric Bork for producing the show. I'm Adam Verrier, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.